the show.
Hey everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Well, they are back after a one-week break where we talked about Halloween and the Reformation. We have Aaron and Blythe back. We'll be airing the second half of their story. I know I left you with a little cliffhanger last time. Sorry about that. Anyway, they are here to share the second half of their story of God getting them to marriage despite their own story and how that came about. So you will look forward to that. Make sure that you do comment on the blog post after it's all said and done, and see, let us know what you think about it. So we would love to hear from you. Our culture segment, actually, funnily enough, is going to be Aaron Hunt, talking about his album, Far Beyond Rescue, his first, his kind of debut album. He is a musician. I think he talked about that on the show on the roundtable. And so I'm talking to him about the album and really what precipitated it, as well as what he learned from it and what he hopes you all will learn as well. And then Candace is actually in, not in the studio, but by phone this week to answer our Q&A. So great show, a pretty diverse show. Here you go. Let us know what you think.
My job was to get him to the party, and so I went to his house to pick him up, and I gave him his birthday present, which made him cry. And I just thought he was a sensitive emo type artist. And he went upstairs to get ready, and it took him forever to come back down. Forever, like a half an hour. And this is a surprise party, and I knew people were waiting. So he comes down, and I can hear him coming, so I run to the front door so we can leave immediately. And he stops on the stairs, and he says, "Can we talk?" And I was like, "Okay." You know, hoping that he would make it really quick. And he said to me, verbatim, because I also remember this, he looked at me and he said, "Do you think that you could ever like me?" And I started laughing again.
It's true. She did laugh.
One of the first conversations we had, which is another conversation for another day, but it was about date to mate. And he was very much into the next woman I date, I'm going to marry. I date with intention, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, I date to get to know people so that I can know what I'm looking for, and et cetera, et cetera. So I knew when he said that he was interested in pursuing a dating relationship, I knew what that meant, and that he was looking at marriage. So it freaked me out. So I laughed and I said, "Can I think about it?"
At which point I was completely convinced, oh my, I am the biggest idiot on the face of the planet. This whole time I have thought, oh, she's madly in love with me. Of course she'll say yes. I've got this in the bag. And then she, and I'm, the record player stops and grinds to a halt. And suddenly, reality sets in. It's not about me. So we do talk about it. And between the birthday party and talking about it, I am praying madly and just with all kinds of fervor to the Lord, please, please, please don't let her ask why this sudden change of heart, because I have no idea. And so, of course, when we sit down to talk, she says, "Well, I think I've made up my mind, but I have one question. Why?" I'm sure I looked like a deer caught in headlights, but I had basically hemmed and hawed for an hour and a half and got around to, this is what I was thinking the other day when I was praying. I don't really trust these guys. I don't think they're good for you. I think I could do a better job taking care of you. And, well, let's spiritualize it. Okay, I think this is God's plan for my life.
And you also said that you could not imagine that we had spent all of that time together.
Yes.
Getting to know each other, becoming so close, to sit at each other's weddings and watch each other walk down the aisle with somebody else.
Right. Yeah. Because though I was in some alternate universe and able to just hang out with this girl for hours on end and be okay with it, at the same time, I understood that God doesn't bring relationships into our lives for trivial reasons. It's not just, us bumping together in the cosmos. He has purpose behind our relationships. And so the thought of watching her walk down the aisle with some other guy, I was like, yeah, that's not happening. So that was definitely a part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and I mean, I think it's good to note too, how you were saying, you know, it was a point where you felt God spoke to you and you had to stop and listen. I mean, I think a lot of people could blow something like that off or could be all crazy, or there are a lot of fears, you know, that could cause you to say, you know, oh, you know, to have to dismiss something or whatever. But you actually, I mean, that's not a, you know, it's not, like I said, at the front end of the show, it's not a normal occurrence or it's not a normal situation. So I think a lot of guys could be like, oh my goodness, that's so crazy. You know, that's great. You know, obviously I'm just going to meet someone and the stars are going to align and then I'll know, you know, then it'll be like, whatever, but this story, this is too weird or whatever. Yeah. So I think it's notable, you know, that you listened and that you said, you know, in the midst of something that was probably very scary, you said, well, I'm going to have to do something about this. So, so that's good. How did you reconcile all of that? I mean, basically you're admitting, okay, we'd spent too much time together. You knew she was a believer, so that was good. Now you obviously knew a lot more about her, but you know, you kind of had your list, which at this point you kind of had to chuck because, you know, I don't know. Did you check out her eyebrows? I mean, how did that go down? I mean,
no, it really was, my relational past was extremely haphazard and just ridiculous. And I never really was deliberate about anything. It was just kind of whatever happens. And so this was the first relationship where I said, okay, I'm going to do this. This is deliberately moving towards marriage unless I hear otherwise, you know, unless God closes the doors, this is where this is leading. And this is crazy, but I'm going to step out in faith. Mm-hmm. And the list really had to go out the window because I saw the list as only working within that just on a whim relationship kind of stuff. It didn't, in practical terms, that list never guaranteed me someone that I would get along well with, that I would converse well with, that I would have things in common with. That was just totally in line with my personal preference, which the further our relationship went, the more I began to see it was totally ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, I had guys in my life when I did freak out and say, what in the world is going on? They had the grace and had the knowledge to say, well, look, quit clowning around. You need to move forward with this and be serious and act like an adult and move towards marriage.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so which obviously begs the question, which I'm sure all the women out there are asking, okay, how then did you reconcile the attraction issue? And Blythe, how did you deal with him now saying, I want to be in a relationship with you? And you're like, what am I, like a last resort? You know, now do you just feel you have to make up for lost time because we spent all this time together? So now you have to like do something about it or whatever. So how did that play out?
Yeah. Well, it was an issue for sure. We had quirky things. You know, I told her I loved her and she said, well, I'd really love to reciprocate that, but I don't have those feelings. And we went to pick out rings before she had said, I love you. And it ended up being a lot more of just trusting that God knew what he was doing rather than relying on my personal feelings. And I knew I had enough relational baggage that I knew my personal feelings weren't to be trusted anyway. Hmm. I guess that's the best way to put that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there wasn't this disappointment that I had somehow missed out on Mrs. Wright. It was more, well, God's doing something. I'm not sure what, but I'm going to move this direction until he tells me otherwise.
Mm-hmm. So would you say, was there a point then where you knew that attraction had grown? Or because you were talking about feelings, not trusting your feelings, but, you know, I'm sure Blythe didn't want to walk down the aisle with you saying like, I don't even know if he's attracted to me. Does he just feel like this is his next assignment from the Lord and I'm the subject of it? Or, you know, because no girl wants that to be her story.
Right. Well, it did. It was a progression. And it was kind of like what Lewis talks about in some of his writings, where sometimes you just have to just kind of beat yourself into submission and just do what you know is right and pray that God will bring the rest of you along. And that really was what it came down to for me, was stepping out in faith and just moving forward, because I was scared to death to get married. I didn't want to get married. I mean, I could barely hold down a job. I was actually unemployed when we got engaged. I didn't, you know, what is this marriage thing about? So it really was about trusting God and just taking little steps of faith. I mean, baby steps of faith, trusting that he knew what he was doing and that he was going to provide, all the while praying for feelings to come along. And they finally did. It wasn't, it certainly wasn't immediate. It was a process. Thankfully a short process, but mm-hmm. it was a process.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that he had mentioned when we were friends was that he doesn't like curly hair, or he didn't like curly hair. And I have curly hair and I can't do anything about it. And that was a big hang up for me. I was like, oh, but he'll never think I'm pretty because I have curly hair. And then my little sister told me, that when you love someone, they become your ideal. So mm-hmm. she said, he will love curly hair because you have curly hair, and no other woman can match up to you because he loves you. But it did take me a while to have those feelings for him because of those conversations we had had, and I wanted to guard my heart. So when he said that he wanted to pursue a relationship, I called Lisa, I called you, and I called other friends and my brother, and they all said, this is a godly man who is pursuing you in a godly way, and you need to respond to that. And so finally I called Erica Counts, our pastor's wife, and she raised her voice at me. And that basically just scared me into going back to him and saying, okay, I'll give this a try. And I told him, I said, I don't have those feelings for you, but I'll give it a shot.
Yeah. I remember having that conversation. Mm-hmm. We talked about that. Yeah, yeah.
So you were on his side. That was,
yeah. I was on his side. I don't think I'd fully understood the list at that point. Otherwise, I maybe would have given him a little more grace. Than whole. But that is crazy. That is crazy. Please check him out, or at least hire a private investigator. But that was okay. God was in it. So one other caveat here then, because I think one of the things, Alyssa, you were asking was just the whole idea of, okay, you know, do you sit down? I mean, there are obviously processes and there are stories, and with you, it kind of worked out in relationship and through a friendship and stuff like that. But, you know, we have people that listen to Boundless who either get into relationships that are bad because they get caught up in all the emotion, and then other, you know, things go by the wayside that very much should be considered. Or we have people that way overanalyze something and they can't, they're just in this inertia and they're completely paralyzed and, you know, heading towards 50 and still single because they can't get anything to happen because they've got this ideal in their head or whatever. How would you speak, and Alyssa, clarify this question if you want to a little bit, but how would you guys speak to the whole, you know, what is non-negotiable, and how do you get that out in the open and make that clear and realize I can build a life with this person and Christ is going to be the center and XYZ versus getting past all the non-negotiables and kind of navigating a relationship in the midst of that?
Yeah. And when you're saying, like, when you choose to love someone, they become the ideal. And I guess the thing for me is that it's kind of tricky to find that balance when you're dating someone of, like, this is absolutely who the Lord has called me to right now, or sometimes we kind of misinterpret what the Lord is saying to us. And so I guess kind of how did you guys balance between what the Lord was saying to you and just hoping and praying that that was accurate and that actually was the Lord speaking to you, and also knowing, like, we're not married, and so this might not be the one for me, like, this may not be, kind of how did you balance that with what your expectations were of who you were going to marry, and also just knowing you were not yet married, and so they didn't have to be the ideal yet.
I think for me, I always had previous relationships. I always had gone in waiting for them to fail. And this was the first relationship that I went into waiting for it to succeed. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have that expectation of, well, any minute now the wheels are going to fall off. It was more an expectation of, if this isn't of God, he's going to put a stop to it. And I can't say enough about the need to be in relationship with older people that have more life experience, that have more Christian life experience, that can speak into your life, that you allow to speak into your life, that know you well, that can give you that kind of guidance. Because it's never supposed to be on your own. And, God didn't build us to be on our own, and he didn't build us to be in relational struggle on our own. He didn't build us to be in spiritual struggle on our own. He built it as a network of his body. So if we exclude ourselves, I think oftentimes in my past, I would be dating a girl and I'd do the fade from church. You know, I would fade from the rest of my network and just disappear for a while. And that's nothing healthy comes of that, because then no one knows who you're dating. They don't know the atmosphere around your dating. They just don't have a way to access you and be able to speak truth to you. So I would say to that if you're, you know, if you are constantly overanalyzing, or if you are obsessing about the one, that's waiting for failure. That's asking for failure, rather than trusting the promises of God and looking to his goodness and his truth and what he's doing in our lives. Because he certainly is not at the helm waiting for failure. He's at the helm creating redemption. And it changes your entire relational perspective when that's your focus.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, too, one of the problems with the one is that with it comes that expectation that, well, because this is the one and because this is, quote unquote, God ordained, this is going to be easy. So this is, I'm going to just know, because it's going to be so natural and it's going to be so easy, and the blinders are going to come off, and it's just going to be, you know, we're going to just be on the same page with everything and just always, you know, gelling and all this kind of stuff. And then I think that's where disillusionment comes, because people get into their first mm-hmm. year of marriage and then they're in counseling because they're just did, and then they say, you know, like Alyssa mm-hmm. brought up, did I choose the wrong one? Did I make a mistake? You mm-hmm. know, and you know, I don't know that that's really scriptural.
And in believing that you're looking for the one, too, that puts a lot of pressure on relationships, because as soon as you see something, I mean, for me, it was very minor things, not character issues, that I, you know, that I would notice in guys and be like, oh, wait, that's a red flag. Mm-hmm. But when you actually see things that you just think, oh, wow, that wouldn't have been my preference, or that wouldn't have been necessarily my top choice, then those things you start to kind of overanalyze, and you kind of think of those as red flags, because if the Lord really loved me and he's going to bring me the one, like, he would be this and that, like, he would be so perfect for me, or she would be so fitting to what I've always dreamed of. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just ridiculous of us to say, like, the Lord is going to make you better and holier through marriage, not bring you this perfect person who's never sinned and who doesn't ever make a choice that you disagree with. So
how I would address that, Alyssa, is that when you have that list, you know, she's got to be 5'7", eyebrows half an inch apart or whatever. I've never measured mine, so I don't know what your new standard is. It's all about you. And marriage isn't about you. It's mm-hmm. about the Lord, and it's how God shows the world how he loves his children. And it's hard to reflect God's love when you are so self-focused. And one of the issues, like Lisa was saying, when Aaron, I knew he was not crazy attracted to me because he had told me that. And I struggled with that for a long time, because every woman wants to be beautiful, and every woman wants, you know, her future husband to see her across a crowded room and know she's the one because she's so beautiful and she caught his eye. Everybody, every woman dreams of that. But what happened through that was sanctification. I did realize that this was not about me, and that God was teaching me about his love for me through my relationship with Aaron. God did not choose me because I was beautiful or because I was good or because I had done anything that pleased him. He loved me because he decided to love me, and that's exactly what happened with Aaron. And so that's what made the impact on me. And I was lucky because clearly he was a godly man, and I didn't have to worry about huge character flaws or big red flags. I knew his family history, and there were no major red flags. There were things that made me stop and think, but I didn't have to worry about all those kinds of things. And what I realized after we were married, and the longer we're married, is that what I thought I needed 5 years ago is not what I needed. I don't know myself well enough to say what I need. The Lord knows me. The Lord designed me. He created me. And when he was doing that, he had Aaron in mind, because he knew that this is the man I was going to marry. He knew exactly what I would need. So when we have our lists of this is what I need, this is what I want, most of it is not necessary, because it's not about us. And most of it is our very limited insight into ourselves. God knows what you need. He knows what you will need 50 years from now. He knows what kind of man you'll need to be married to 10 years from now when you're having a family. So that was a huge step for me in understanding God's sovereignty and what he was doing in my life and how he was handling that situation.
I think there's such a balance in that too, because I think we tend to err on either side of that and saying like, what I think that I need, I don't necessarily need. And like you kind of learn the process of that thinking, oh, this is who I'm going to marry. No doubt about it. Like, this is what I need in order to be happy in marriage. Or you kind of swing to the other end of the pendulum and you say like, then I'm called to the Hosea story of marrying, you know, this girl who's not godly at all. And she's, you know, I don't know. I guess there's just kind of a balance between marrying somebody who's just a mess and thinking like, well, the Lord's just going to redeem this marriage and like, I'm going to be better because of it because I've loved someone who's just insane, as opposed to like marrying somebody because of your selfish reasons. And I think like in the midst of that, there's somewhere a balance of saying like, you know, they do have the core characteristics, like you guys were saying, like, is he a godly guy and does he have, you know, good family or whatever those things are of those characteristics. What would you guys say those characteristics are that non-negotiables in the middle, like if you're looking at a balanced life and a balanced marriage, what are those things that you're not marrying a crazy person and you're not marrying for selfish reasons?
Is he a Christian? Period. That whole Hosea thing, you know, where your example, marrying somebody who's totally messed up. So what? You know, God is still God. And say you marry someone and it's a mess. He's still God. Your marriage is not for your happiness. It's for your holiness. And it's for the sake of the world, not for your own sake. So I'm sitting here with the man of my new dreams, and I'm very content in my marriage. And it's easy for me to say that, but I've been through enough in life to be able to say that with confidence, mm-hmm. that it's still, even if you do marry quote unquote the wrong person, God's still God. And so as long as that person loves the Lord, I think you can marry anybody.
In our small groups, we've said, here's your non-negotiable. Are they a believer? End of story. Mm-hmm. Because anything that you try to tack onto that ultimately becomes personal preference. You know, oh gosh, this person has a terrible past. Okay. You know, that's why there's the gospel, because God redeems terrible stuff in this world for his glory. And it's really, I don't know, I think for my generation, for our generation, it's more an issue of, sadly, I think it's more of an issue of convenience than anything else. You know, I think oftentimes for me as a single guy, it was about convenience. I had random relationships that would happen and then fall apart because they were convenient. They were at my elbow. It wasn't because I was looking for a godly relationship. It was, well, this is convenient. And there's so much to be said, Lisa. You know, you referenced the work of a relationship. It is work, and it's supposed to be. And if we don't have a picture of how God himself has worked to be in relationship with us, then we don't have that grace and that understanding and that maturity to have those sorts of deep, meaningful relationships with others. And I think that's why I say the only non-negotiable is, are they a believer or not?
Mm-hmm. And I think that there are, you know, we would say this on Boundless, that there are several things inherent in that person being a believer, you know, mm-hmm. in that they are going to yeah. be yes. actively pursuing Certainly. Christ. Right. It's not yes. just like I'm a Christian because I'm an American, you know, mm-hmm. or something right. like that. I mean, there are things that you will see as fruit of that. And, you know, a believing man is going to want to rise to leadership within the relationship and at least, you know, be on that trajectory in that direction. You know, not that he will have arrived, just as we as women will not have arrived in all the qualities, you know, that we're supposed to have. But kind of narrows down the list a little bit. Wow.
Yeah. That said, you don't have to marry anybody. Going on the other extreme, you know, mm-hmm. you don't have to be like, well, he's a Christian, so I better marry him.
I think the question you have to ask yourself always, not just with this topic, but any topic, is God enough for me? Because if he is, then he's going to get you through a terrible relationship, a great relationship. He's always going to be there. But is he enough? Because if he's not, then yeah, you are going to tack things on to that list.
Mm-hmm. And he well, hasn't promised that if you follow him, you'll have a happy marriage or a good marriage, or that your husband won't cheat on you or that you won't cheat on him. You know, there are no promises like that. All we have is the promise of God and his love for us.
And we're certainly not saying that you need to go out looking for a project. You know, mm-hmm. like that's, right. that's God right. doesn't call us to go seeking projects because that's not real relationship either. Right. But
I think that's what's so great about what you were saying about doing relationship and ultimately doing marriage within the context of community, because it's always good to have people speaking into your life on it. You know, first of all, with the gospel in general, but secondly, just with things that will help you and encourage you mm-hmm. in your marriage relationship, as well as in getting to marriage and saying, you know, sometimes, I mean, I know of relationships that happen because flat out some older godly believer said, you need to consider her.
Right.
And the guy's yeah. just like, what, you know, whatever. And, you know, or a woman, you need to be willing to, you know, be pursued by him and to give him a chance and to, you know, like Blythe said, it's not that you're married right now, you know, just get to know him and go, you know, it's dinner. You know, start out with dinner and then worry about your marriage vows. So, you know, I think that's good because there's so much wisdom in that in godly believers. So, well, cool. Well, we have to wrap it up. Alyssa, great job with coming up with the questions and the whole topic in general. Thank you. Thank you all for being
part
of this.
It's great.
Well, hey everyone, for this week's culture segment, I am back in the studio with Aaron Hunt. Aaron, welcome.
Thank you.
Back. Aaron is also a musician. He did reference his music some and the fact that he's a graphic artist and an artsy guy in general. So loving the glasses, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
So he has recently, and by recently I mean this year, 2010, created and recorded and produced an album. It's actually titled Far Beyond Rescue. And I've been hearing a lot about it, not only from him and Blythe, because they're my friends, but on Facebook and everything. Like, all the, you know, it's funny because we have a lot of mutual friends, Blythe and I do, and a lot of people in the church and whatever. And, you know, you go to people's music section and it has all their likes and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's like, Far Beyond Rescue, Far Beyond Rescue. And I'm like, who doesn't like Far Beyond Rescue? So, Aaron, tell us a little bit just about the album. And I know the album itself, as you described to me, is more than just the music. It's actually the process
right.
that you went through to create
yeah.
that. So just give us a little snapshot of what the music is, like how you would describe it if you had
okay.
to write your little marketing brochure.
Right.
What is it for the folks out there? And I'm hoping that we can, we want to bumper the segment, you know, with a couple clips so people can hear it.
Sure.
But tell me a little bit about what this music is as far as a genre and what people can understand from it.
Okay, certainly. It's playing off of and playing into the new kind of the revival of hymnody, which is the tradition of hymn writing. Several years ago, probably 10, 12 years ago in Nashville, there were some guys that got together at Belmont University and researched a fairly sizable U.S. grant and got a bunch of money to take old hymns, set them to new music, and put them in a hymn book. And I became exposed to this when I was helping out with music for a church plant in Fort Collins and became very enthralled with the idea. And in recent years, I've done youth retreats where I've taken this music and kind of taken it up a notch. So the album is an attempt to blend as many styles as possible to be as inclusive as possible to the worshiper, and just with a simple goal of taking old hymns, revitalizing the music to make them relevant to today's audience.
Okay. So these are, the text are older hymns. Some of them familiar.
Right.
But some more maybe driven from like Puritan songbooks.
Yeah, there are some more that are obscure on there. And there's one original, but all the rest are old hymn texts.
That's correct. So how is this different? So, well, I shouldn't say how is this different. I'm assuming then that this is different from, like, we had Keith and Kristen Getty on the show, and they're writing modern hymns.
Right.
So this is kind of, yeah, you're basically amping up texts, you know, that have been written before.
Yeah, okay. I definitely feel more comfortable arranging other stuff that's already in existence. That's why there's only one original on the on the album, is because I feel my gifting is more geared towards doing arrangements of what's already been written.
Yeah. Okay. Now you said, you know, you were in Fort Collins, kind of, and started kind of getting a grasp of this and what that looked like. So how did you get from that point to, wow, I actually just actually did create an album? What was that process like?
Well, it really started as being asked to lead music on youth retreats. And I had at that point gotten a little burned on the typical, you know, the top 40s of requested worship music, gotten a little burned out on that. So
you'd sung a few too many rounds of "I am a friend of God."
Right. The Jesus is my boyfriend thing was wearing a little thin with me. So I felt that.
Though for some of us, he has to be. I'm just being honest. But okay. Some of us still, it's very near and dear to our hearts. But go ahead. Continue.
I understand. And I really felt in the Presbyterian tradition that I'm a part of, that it was appropriate to do a little more prep and do a little more digging and try to create something that was meaningful and yet relevant. So over the last several years, I've been doing youth retreats where I've taken hymns and set them to rock music. And I got a group of guys from New Life Church, and I said, here's the deal. We're going to split our set list. You bring five songs that you're used to playing. I'll bring five songs that I'm used to playing. And then we're going to rehearse together so that they have a cohesive sound. So suddenly we were taking hymns and they were coming out sounding like something you'd hear on a Hillsong CD or something you'd hear on Top 40s radio. And the response was just overwhelming. The students were all just blown away that these were hymns. You know, they had such a stigma in their minds of hymns require an organ and warbly old people singing in choir robes. And it was just kind of a real shock to their paradigm. And as I continued in that process, I kept getting requests for, well, where can I purchase this? Where can I pick this up? And I had to embarrass, you know, say, oh, well, you can't. I'm sorry. Come to the ski retreat next year. And so that kind of necessitated the need for this album to be recorded and it's, you know, just to make it available, if nothing else.
Yeah. Well, and I will say I was kind of surprised, pleasantly surprised when because I popped it in, you know, a few times in the last few weeks. And even the first, you know, the first track, it just kind of like drops a little bit of a mad beat. Like I was like, whoa, this is actually like hard rock. Because I think I was expecting more of like a folk rock or something, you know? So I was like, well, okay.
Yeah.
So, but actually very, it's a varied style.
It is.
Because, you know, it started out with that. And then by the time you get into like Nothing But the Blood and Sweet Hour of Prayer, you know, and it's nice because there are some, you're very much, some of them you've kept traditional tunes at least, but then you've really just kind of pumped it up and definitely arranged it in a very unique way. And then some of them you've kind of completely blown the whole thing up and started from scratch. What's your personal favorite track on the album?
My personal favorite is track 14. Rejoice, the Lord is King. That one was
just a, I was so thankful to be able to record that song. A couple years ago, I had found out that I've had chronic acid reflux for most of my life, and my voice has always been kind of what I would call Michael W. Smith raspy. And I, as I started receiving treatment for that, my voice started to clear up, and I was able to sing like I had never sung before. And that song, I was able to just let go and just sing very freely and openly. And it was just, it was really a relief, and really just, I was just so personally thankful to be able to sing in that style on that song. And it just, I don't know, there were a lot of things that came together for that song that I really to this day still enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Is there a lyric kind of like deciding on the, you know, deciding on the set list or track list, however you would decide, because obviously there are some times where, you know, you maybe have more options than ultimately you mm-hmm. can land on for an album.
Yeah.
Is there anything like personally, like lyrically, that just really spoke to you that you were like, this is one that I really need to record?
Well, I did try to keep the theme of the album rescue oriented. Mm-hmm. So talking about ways that God answers that cry, or talking about that cry from a human perspective directly. Mm-hmm. The last track is kind of a resolution of that, and mm-hmm. and saying, you know, here's the deal. The Lord is King. This, you have your answers in Him. But that was the deciding factor for the track list, was it had to talk about God's attributes in how He is able, mm-hmm. or it had to talk about our need to be rescued.
Mm-hmm. Huh, that's cool. What would you say, who's out there that's doing music that you feel is really reflective of not only quality and creativity, but just in the Christian world, who's really putting something out there that you're like, wow, this is something that I think is not only cutting edge, but really for me is personally worshipful?
Well, I really enjoy, this summer I had the privilege to get to know Nathan Clark George a little better. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate him because I really feel like he's a kindred spirit, because he's such a dichotomy. He grew up playing in a punk band with his brother. Mm. And now he plays this very, very somber, contemplative, acoustic stuff. And I really appreciate his heart for ministry. And, although I enjoy his music, I enjoy it all the more because I know where he's coming from and I know his heart behind it. Mm-hmm. I can say the same of Glenn Packiam. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate that guy because I know where his heart is for worship as a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And when he comes to the table to write a song, he is thinking about, you know, how do I encourage others in adopting this, you know, integrating this into their life. Mm-hmm. It's not just a let's check a box on Sunday morning. It's about how do we apply this on a daily basis? How do we live in worship with God?
Mm-hmm. So what kind of responses have you had to the album so far?
I've had good responses. Even the guys that I covered their tunes, covered their arrangements for the album, I've had good responses. Thankfully, I've had good responses from a variety of demographics. Mm-hmm. And that was the hope behind the album. That's why there are so many genres portrayed on the album, is because I was hoping to draw in as many people as possible, because that's oftentimes a shortcoming of worship in the church, is we alienate one group or another group. And so this was a real push for unity in worship. And it's good to hear the feedback, and I certainly don't expect everyone to like every song on the album. You know, it's not a, hey, I hope you listen to this endlessly for the rest of your life. you know, if there are one or two songs on there that really speak to someone, I feel like that's a great thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was not very Southern gospel heavy, but I still appreciated what I heard, I'm going to be honest. So, you know, maybe Bill Gaither can do
one.
A guest.
Yeah,
just kind of guest spot for you. So speaking of which, anything else in you that you're going to be coming up with? I mean,
well, there is a little for those that like to geek out over album art, there are some fun things with the album art. If you flip the inside, instead of Far Beyond Rescue, it says Far Beyond Redeemed. And that's a little hint at the next project, which will be in the works. There are a couple of artists that have expressed interest in doing some remixes from songs on the album. And those will be probably released individually over the next year or so. But yeah, this has been a great process in learning to trust God with my music. And I'm excited to see where else that, you know, I feel like I've just taken the first step down the path after doing music almost all my life. First step forward to trusting God with music. I'm excited to see where that takes me.
Yeah. Well, and I think definitely the music is an extension, as it is with writers, with musicians, with theologians. It's, you know, what God is, the work that he's doing in us now, and it's an extension of that, and us being able to express that, which is pretty amazing. And it's neat to see that others who have gone before us have done that as well, and have done it beautifully, you know, with the lyrics, whether, you know, obviously poetry and things that have been set to music and beyond that, but what they have done, it's a great heritage of faith, and neat that we can
certainly
kind of be a part of that as well. So well, that is awesome. I'm really excited. We want to make sure that you guys know about this. Check out the album. You can get more info on it at farbeyondrescue.com. You can also like the album on Facebook, as I told you on the front end of this interview. Everyone is liking it. Everyone's liking it. So you'll hear a couple clips here as well. So make sure that you do check it out. You know, we always feature especially newer and more unknown artists here on the Boundless Show. So we love to have the opportunity to do that, especially when they're my friends. So, no, I'm just teasing, but I mean, you know, whatever. So I'm not saying it's good just because they're my friends. That's not what I'm saying. So
let's be clear about this.
Exactly. Let's be clear about it. I am saying, and you know that sometimes I put albums on when I'm cleaning my house, and I'm saying that this one had served that function at one or two times possibly. So if I can clean to it, you can do a lot of stuff to this. So Aaron, thanks so much for giving us a little snapshot of what this is. Again, Far Beyond Rescue, and check them out at farbeyondrescue.com.
What can wash away my sin? Nothing but the blood of Jesus. What can make me whole again? Nothing but the blood of Jesus. Oh, precious is the flow makes me white as snow. No other fount I know. Nothing but the blood of Jesus.
Well, we are opening up this week's inbox, and I am joined by Candace. Hey, Candace.
Hi, Lisa.
Great to have you.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Well, I need you to answer a question from Jennifer. This is kind of one that we hear a recurring theme here at Boundless, but I don't think we've ever had it addressed in this way, so we're going to let you take a stab at it.
Okay, I'm ready.
She says, some friends and I have started a singles Bible study group. We range in age from 31 to 23. We are a small group with four girls and two guys. It seems that the girls always have to plan everything we do. I'd like to encourage the guys to step up and initiate some of the fellowships. How can I encourage them to take a more active role in the planning?
Stop leading.
That was
a
quick answer.
Don't do what you're doing. Really, the most practical advice is to say, look, if you want the guys to lead, then you have to stop leading. And that's going to create a vacuum, and one of two things are going to happen. Either they're going to step up and lead, or they're not. And if they don't, I say, if this is a singles Bible study with an ulterior motive of finding husbands, they're probably not the best guys to be in the study with.
Yeah. That's true.
That's my short answer. We waste so much time kind of noodling over this and saying, well, how do I get him to lead, and how do I encourage him to do this? And the reality is, it's not your job to encourage a man to be a man as much as it is to fulfill your role as the woman. Be a woman and then see if he responds as a man. And if he doesn't, you know, you can ask the Holy Spirit to convict his heart. But beyond that, I say move on.
Yeah. Now, are you talking just about like the spiritual element of like this Bible study? Because there are a lot of women out there who have creative ideas. I know I've gotten kind of stuck in this place before too, where I know something exciting that I want to do and I know that a group of friends would like to do it or whatever. And so I'll plan it. Now, ultimately, I've gotten stuck being in the role of the planner, which I didn't want to be in. But so where's the balance in that so that it's not like, hey, guys, you know, please read our minds and know that we'd love to go this quilting bee, but figure out how to make it happen.
Yeah, well, they're probably not going to be into the quilting, but you know, certainly if you have an idea, hey, it'd be really great to do a, you know, a small group around this book. Mm-hmm. And, you know, assuming that it's a book that the guys will want to read, and I think this is an important thing for women to remember, that it needs this is a little bit tricky, you know? I mean, if you're meeting around a book of the Bible, that's probably safe. Mm-hmm. So let's say you want to study James. You can invite a group of, in this case, six people, ask one of the guys, say, hey, would you be willing to lead the study?
Sure. Okay.
So don't put yourself in the position that you want him to fill. I think that's the key. Don't play the role you want him to play. Step back and see if he will lead.
Yeah.
And two, you know, another thing that she could do to maybe these guys just need a little bit of encouragement. The best encouragement is going to come from an older man. So maybe the solution is, if they're not stepping up, is to invite an older couple to join the group and then let the husband lead. Because mm-hmm. that will model for the guys masculine leadership.
Sure, yeah. And I think worse comes to worse. You know, you're in a church setting and the women are really wanting to get a study going and the guys aren't initiating it. I mean, sometimes maybe the women just need to go off and do their own study, you know, instead of constantly coming up with the subject material, planning the study, it's like, whoa, you know, maybe the guys need to just do their own thing and figure out what that's going to look like. So,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, you really have to, this is really an important issue to resolve now, because what you don't want to do is set a pattern for being the leader and then end up marrying one of those guys, and that's what he's expecting, and it's what has become the norm. And then you're just frustrated that you're always leading.
Right.
And the quickest way to remedy that situation is simply to stop doing it. Don't lead.
Yeah, that's true. All right, well, there you have it, folks. Women need to stop leading and create that vacuum. I think there's something to be said for that. So.
And that's hard to do, because it really does require us to, as women, to look to the Lord to be the leader and to, you know, rely on the Holy Spirit. And he may not move in the first 5 minutes that there's a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you have to be willing to live with a little bit of that tension.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. Well, that is it, folks, for this week's show. Please do write to us, editor@boundless.org, so we can get your thoughts on this question as well as other things that we've been discussing. Make sure you are staying in touch with us on Facebook and on Twitter and on the blog itself. And, we hope to be hearing from you in the near future. So I am your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org. Focus on the family.